Welcome back to the Magic Minds Podcast, a podcast dedicated to interviewing the brilliant minds that are shifting our collective perspective. Today's episode is with Talitha Phillips. She is the CEO of Claris Health, an organization here in Los Angeles dedicated to impoverished mothers. It is a touching conversation in so many different aspects within the work that they do here in this city and the inspiration they are providing to number of organizations around the world. Talitha is a beautiful example of what help and an unexpected turn in life can do to an individual. She herself actually received services and help from Claris Health well before she ever considered working for them. And a couple decades later is now their CEO. It's a beautiful story with a brilliant mind. And I'm excited for you all to hear it. So without further delay, let's get into the conversation with Talitha Phillips. This is the Magic Minds Podcast. Talitha, you're on the pod. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm really, as you can see, I'm excited. I've only had one Magic Mind today too. So if I were to have two, then I'm going to be jumping through the microphone. Yeah. For listeners, but genuinely so moved by the chance to speak with you, mm-hmm. and the work that you and Claris do, and just so excited that listeners are going to get a chance to peer behind the veil of the work that you all do in Los Angeles, but also something that we were just saying right before we started, something within the extreme margins of our society. We know there's a connection to mental health and mental illness, but we rarely see behind the veil, and we really rarely get to talk with someone that sees that connection every day. But before we jump into that aspect that I'm just excited to chat with you about, do you mind giving people a little bit of background on Claris Health and the group that you run here in Los Angeles?
Yeah, super excited to be here and share with you and everyone else. But yeah, Claris has been around for decades. It's an organization that started here locally in Santa Monica in the 70s and was very small, but always had sort of a passion for working with individuals who were in, tough, challenging situations. Sometimes often around pregnancy and sexual health, but it's grown so much more beyond that.
Yeah, how did it start?
Yeah, it started with some women in Santa Monica who just saw this need for individuals who were facing these pregnancy situations, making sure that they knew that they had education and support and options and just sort of walking alongside them through these situations. And I joined in 2001, so 23 years ago almost. And at that time, it was still really small. I mean, it was mostly counseling, peer counseling, advocacy. We weren't a medical facility yet. So when I was hired, the goal, the big dream at the time was, let's become a full medical, licensed medical clinic. And so we ended up achieving that. And then we grew beyond the West Side. And so it's medical, mental health, and support services for individuals and families in pregnancy and sexual health situations. But in more recent years, we've expanded even beyond that. And so we have a clinic in West LA and South LA, and then a mobile medical clinic that drives into some of the hardest to reach parts of the city and bringing care directly to people who are often afraid to go to the doctor, or they have a lot of mistrust of the medical community, or they lack transportation, or they're dealing with mental health, a mental health crisis or situation that prevents them from sort of accessing those resources. So we bring it directly to them. So we've, you know, expanded beyond a lot of even general health care and just health assessments and therapy services and just being there. And then with, you know, the pandemic, it opened up this whole new world of bringing services to the nation virtually. And a lot of our mental health services expanded far beyond LA. So one of our programs is we do court mandated parenting classes and support. So if there's a situation where it's under the umbrella of family preservation and reunification, but if there's a situation where you know, Child Protective Services is involved or there's a hint of that and they're ordered to do parenting classes. We offer those for free. Mm-hmm. And we have clients right now as far as Italy. We have someone in Italy and Mississippi and New York. And so it's really just sort of expanded the boundaries to say, hey, no matter where you are, we're there so that that isn't another thing that prevents you from, you know, family reunification or preservation.
Well, that is such a, I've never heard those terms, family preservation or reunification. And on a deep level, it's kind of like, oh, that's obvious. We should, if we can preserve a family for, I just know with three children, how hard it would be if something happened to one of us, if there was just only one. And that is, it's so natural in the world we live in that that happens and families don't, are maybe unpreservable. But it also feels, it's such an interesting kind of thought process that's going in my head of so obviously beneficial, but then also never talked about. And I think this is one of the things that really blew me away with Claris as we started to research y'all last year for listeners and for subscribers that don't know, 5 cents of every bottle of Magic Mind that's sold goes to a nonprofit cause that my co-founder William and I feel strongly about supporting. And it's always in the mental health realm. Before it's been, before it's been typically in substance abuse or mental health for those that are underhoused in various areas of cities that we operate in. But this one, in the middle of last year, when I started to come across you all as an organization and started to research you all pretty deeply, it was fascinating how many layers there are to the situations that you all find your clients in. Typically expectant mothers, that many of which are homeless, that might have substance abuse issues, often have mental illness, that it's almost like finding them in the most dynamic time in their life and offering like a 360 degree care instead of, oh, we do this one thing, go 8 blocks away for this other thing, go 30 minutes on the bus for this other thing, call this number for this other, but you all have this 360 degree care for perhaps those that are on the margins of society going through the most dynamic time, maybe in their life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so the word Claris means clarity. And I love, even interesting, like the Magic Mind and the productivity. I'm like, we're all about just like clarity. And I think what a lot of these situations bring about is just this, these feelings of, it feels confusing, it feels dark. And so the idea of Claris is clarity and brightness in those moments. And just understanding the dignity and the value of every person, regardless of where they're, whether it's their race or their economic, socioeconomic status or where they live or where they don't live, you know, just seeing the value in every human being. And I think what has been really neat about it is, yes, we do serve, you know, some of the most marginalized or under-resourced in the community, but we also serve those who are, you know, what would be considered more middle class, but might be out here and they just don't have family to support them or maybe they're young or maybe they have a couple of children and they just lost their job. So it's not one. I think sometimes people are like, oh, you're a nonprofit and you work in this field, so everyone must be, you know, low income. But the reality is pregnancy changes your life, whether you live in Malibu or whether you live in Compton. And so having an organization that is, I love that you said 360, we use the term integrated. So we look at every person and there's a physical, emotional side of every human being. And so the care that we bring shouldn't just only address one of those, right? Like you might come to us today for an STD test, or maybe you're coming for a pregnancy test, but you're walking in with a host of other things that are on your mind, or potentially that you need resources for. And so to sit down for a moment and have somebody offer you a cup of tea, or, you know, just to say, hey, we're here for you. What are all the other, you're going to meet with a medical provider in a moment, but what are all the other things that you need? Or if you come for therapy and in the middle of a therapy session, we discover that there's a practical physical need, then we can try to meet that. Right. And if we can't do it, we do have a network of about 320 partners in the city. Many of whom we train in how do you work with this specific population in a way that restores dignity and value and sees this so much. I mean, if you talk about pregnancy, it's one of the most polarizing, unexpected pregnancy, right? One of the most polarizing topics in this nation, right? Especially in an election year. And yet we have found a way to bring unity around.
There's so much,
you're
right. There's so much harmony because it's also not some top down. It's like values are there. And this is something I definitely want to talk to you about. There's so many different, like we said, layers to the dynamic situation that someone can find themselves in that are massively under resourced or even well resourced, but in a life scenario where they really do need an organization like yours to step in. I know I want you to talk about your story in there as well. Or it can be on the mental health services of someone just had an abortion 2 weeks ago and are reeling because it's not so cut and dry. It's not just, it's not as simple as the political narrative would want people to, think. It's such a crazy dynamic scenario to go through, and to provide mental health services for them, therapy for them for free on an ongoing basis for as long as they need. It goes back to what I said right at the top. And I would love for you to talk about your story as well before we dive in to some of the questions I have about Clarice and some of the things that I'd love to talk about for the listeners. But it feels like this is like the family preservation or mental health services for under-resourced expectant mother. And it seems like, oh, that's obvious. It should exist. It also seems like this is beneficial. But then there's also like this third thought of, oh no, don't come with your, it's almost like I can hear other people or certain people feeling like, don't come with your values. Like who says that a family should stay together? That you all are in a place where you can counsel, which is so silly to actually say out loud, because that person is ultimately advocating for no one to be there for them or for every family could be better off by not being preserved. So it's almost like when you introduce values, which are so obviously in the name valuable, it does become a bit of a quagmire. And you all navigate that so well because you don't seem to take a side. You just seem to say, here are the different services for anyone, anywhere. So before we dive into that, though, do you mind telling listeners a little bit about your story? Because it's such a beautiful one.
I came to California to go to college. And the summer after my freshman year in college, I found out that I was pregnant. And I called the university that I was at and just anonymously at the time and just said, hey, if somebody was pregnant, what happens? And I was on an academic scholarship that covered my housing and most of my tuition. And they said, well, you can't live on campus. And they just had a very, sort of cut and dry answer. And there were a host of, I'm the oldest in my family, the only girl, and just feeling really defeated and not knowing who to turn to. And I ended up going to a clinic very different than Clarice, and then eventually ended up having an abortion and deciding at that time, like, it was definitely not something I wanted to do, but feeling like, okay, well, that's really my only option for a lot of reasons. and thought I would just bury that and never tell a soul, but it just kept eating away at me. I, you know, didn't process it and felt so alone. And I think at the time, you know, I really thought I felt like I was the only one that was dealing. I didn't know anybody else, you know, and that's often what we do when we're hiding and we're, you know, in these hard situations. And so I just really buried that, but it would sort of pop up every once in a while. And then my senior year in college, I heard about this organization that had a group, like a support group or process group for pregnancy loss and abortion. And so it took me probably a month to make the phone call. And then finally I got up the courage and, you know, and I'd love to be like, oh, and then I joined and my life changed, but hard work happened. And in that group, one, I, for the first time, realized I wasn't alone. Started to realize, like, I think in my mind, it was like, I felt so defined by that decision. It was influencing a lot of how I, you know, I was like, well, I made this decision for school, so I have to graduate the top of my class. Or, you know, it just was like this, these crazy things that I was doing, not even connecting and then realizing, oh my gosh, I think that. So I was in a very unhealthy relationship. I stayed there feeling like that's what I deserved. And then so slowly in this group, we worked through the grief cycle and all the different emotions. And, you know, the eventual goal is acceptance. And really, I mean, I guess a word would be like free, feeling so free from that. And so went through that group and met some incredible people, loved the organization. It was what is now Claris. And thought, thank you. And I'm moving on. I mean, I had student loans and, you know, thought I was supposed to be a lawyer or a consultant or I had all these big dreams, right? And then it was just a really crazy situation. I moved on with my life and the people from this tiny organization. I mean, at the time, our budget was 90,000. It was two part-time employees. And I kept running into these women around town and they were like, we really feel like you're supposed to take the job as the director. And I had no experience. It's like, nope, not interested. And would run into them and they had, their former director had had a baby. And so they didn't have anyone in the role for almost a year. And, finally, one day, I just remember saying, oh my gosh, if I'm supposed to take this job, then it better become abundantly clear. And I had received a call from an actor. I've shared this before. So it was Chuck Norris and his wife. And they were expecting twins and they wanted a night nurse, somebody to be with the babies at night, and had heard about me. I had been a nanny and had a lot of baby experience. And so they really wanted me. And I was like, oh, the only way that I could work that many nights is if I have a part-time day job, which is what Claris was. So my journey there was definitely a little unconventional. I'd love to say that I knew this was my passion, but I sort of arrived kicking and screaming. And I'm the only girl. I have three brothers. So like women and baby, I mean, it was so not what I thought I'd do with my life. But as I joined, I think having had that personal experience, I was 23 when I started. So having this personal experience, and then just looking at this city and going, are we relevant at all to the needs in the city? And the truth is, at the time, I think the answer was no. Like, I think we did really good work and we deeply cared about people. But the needs in LA are so much greater than what we could. And then I looked around the city and realized everything's fragmented and mental health is a huge component. And how do we address some of these other needs? Because it's really difficult if you're only seeing people who are in these really difficult situations, but you want to look at prevention. Like, how do we look at the prevention? How do you meet them in these situations? And then how do we help create better futures for people? Mm-hmm. So we really look at that whole model now, or on the before, during, and after, and helping people realize they're not defined by these moments. And I am such a, you know, testimony to that, that, you know, I have gone on in life and had a really great thing. So I can, sometimes you can't see beyond your moment, whatever you're struggling with today, right? Feels so overwhelming. And to have somebody come in and say, let me just help paint a picture of what the future might look like, gives people permission to dream and permission to realize that they're not defined by all the crazy things we've done in life, right? Mm-hmm. And, that they still are so valued and loved and have so much potential.
Yeah, there's so many stories that you all have on in your website and your channels of people that you I imagine that adds to the extreme uncertainty, anxiety, fear of, let's say you're an addict for 11 years and then you become pregnant and you want to keep the baby, but you have this in not only crazy withdrawal, you have this community that is about as gnarly as a community can get to think about bringing a child up in. You have the pregnancy, which is, it's, I mean, that's a universe of uncertainty for anyone. You have this immense guilt and this immense isolation of, oh my God, everything I'm thinking through, I'm doing it on my own. And yeah, almost by definition, I don't really, I have a severe distrust of authority, severe distrust of anyone that could try to help me. I mean, it was really interesting going through some of the stories where so many women, one of the stories at the dinner that I had a chance to attend, in, was it October or November?
October.
Where a woman had, in an abusive relationship, felt like she wouldn't be able to just keep her baby, her own baby. And that imprisonment of isolation, and she could not believe that there was an organization that existed to help. I mean, it's very hard for us to believe that organizations like Claris or any truly effective, we know that there are some altruistic organizations out there, but effective and altruistic and well-resourced to really help you in that 360-degree way instead of the shelter you went to once that then kicked you out after 48 hours because you couldn't stay there more than 48 hours. Yeah. Like it just, you feel like you're passed around. So it was almost like all the resources you need in the time when you need all the resources in the world. It's so well run. As someone that's worked in so many nonprofits over the years, my background actually in poverty alleviation was for 2 years on the ground in poverty alleviation in right outside of Cape Town, South Africa. And studying development economics, studying numerous nonprofits that we've given to in the past, y'all are by far the best that we've come across.
Wow.
It's truly astounding. It's almost like, I want to get Talitha in for a conversation just to understand how they got to this point. But I also wanted to at least lay that context out for listeners that it's not just chatting with a CEO of a nonprofit, but it is one of the best nonprofits I've ever come across, and a very rigorous approach to looking at them over the years. But do you mind talking a little bit about the different services that you all provide, and maybe start with just an anecdote or story to for listeners to get a sense of what a person coming to you all might look like and what they might need.
And the story you shared is such a sweet story, because I want to share another one, but I wanted to say I do love that story because, you know, here is a person who she was an immigrant from another country too, and so there was a language barrier. She was alone. She was in an abusive marriage, and had a toddler at the time, and came to us actually for a pregnancy that ended in a miscarriage. Because she was very concerned about what to do and could she have another baby and how would she do that. But it's like she entered, you know, one way of needing this pregnancy support for a baby that she did end up losing. But then the door was open to, oh my gosh, you guys have resources for me and my 2-year-old. Therapy, parenting classes, and then the courage that she needed to walk away from that marriage in a country that is not her own, and having somebody to hold her hand through it. So she joined multiple of our programs and still is being supported today. But there was
another one in an abusive relationship that she also, with y'all's help, had gotten out of. And she mentioned that night, though, it was the first night she'd ever worn a dress.
Yes. We helped buy her a dress for the dinner. But she, you know, just even going. And she had actually come to a graduation ceremony that we did for the, so the court mandated, we have a program called Every Mother's Advocate. And so you're paired with a woman, usually a volunteer, that walks through and teaches all of your classes. And through that, a relationship is built. And so any needs that arise, like we've had situations where, you know, Child Protective Services says reunification can happen, but there need to be beds at the home. So we were able to buy beds and mattresses so that that's not one more barrier that prevents these kids from coming home. And you know, I think in our society, I mean, aside, you know, we hear so much about foster care, and we hear, and often I think if you're more affluent, you hear about it in, oh, we should foster children, right? Like we should do, which, yes, I agree. I think that's a great thing. But even an issue like foster care, you forget the humanity behind, like, these children have families. And what if, instead of fostering all these kids, what if we fostered them but found resources to help them reunify with their parents? Because ultimately, I think we would all agree that it's always best to stay with your family if that's possible, if it's safe and it's possible. But the story I was going to share is Anna, her name is Alencia, and she, her, we have her video on YouTube, but I love Alencia's story so much because when we met her, she was barely pregnant. I mean, I think she was like 5 weeks pregnant, and she had come to some community fair where we just had a booth, and she walked up and started sharing with, the person who was there on our staff that she was pregnant. She, was homeless. She had her, had, I believe she was living with her boyfriend, and he kicked her out when she told him she was pregnant. So she was alone, about to go into a shelter, and came to Claris. And, you know, it's interesting because it, she's not one that accessed a ton of services. She came, we did some medical care, helped her throughout that pregnancy. I think she may have gone to some of our therapy sessions, and we helped a little bit. But Alencia went on, and she is now, not that many years later, I mean, I think her son is six. So in six years, she started a business. She got married. She has three children. And she's just this beautiful, her smile is all you need to see to know what little services, what a big impact they can have. And she has one of my favorite quotes. We just met with her last year, and she said, "Life was happening to me, and now life is happening for me." And just the success story of, you know, she's like, "I walked into Claris and you guys were like, this isn't you. You're all these things that you, that's not who you are. You are incredibly brilliant and you are so beautiful and you have such a future ahead of you." And she's like, "I just picked myself up." And, you know, so for a while she did have to access, you know, a lot of resources, but then now she's turning around and giving back, which I love. So that's one of the stories that popped in. So.
Yeah, it's and the story's really hammered home. Do you, and set the groundwork for this next question, what are the different services that you all provide? And you mentioned kind of the what people think about when they think about helping. If you're affluent, maybe you think about foster care, or you have the even middle income and can foster care. But I would love to know the different services you all provide and maybe the narratives with you on the ground for 20 plus years to where you're like, this is a narrative that doesn't get told, that people don't really think of. And it's, you know, paramount to the work y'all do.
Yeah. So the services, so on the medical side, we do, I'll start. So our mobile clinic does like general health screening. So we go into, neighborhoods where it might be, you know, blood pressure, medication review, you know, basic BMI, just how are you doing? And then we can
specific to around pregnancies?
No, that's okay. Anyone. So for women and men, 55 and under, actually. So even beyond reproductive age. And so we do that on the mobile. And then for pregnancy related services, we do early prenatal care. So sometimes people come, they'll get, take a pregnancy test, they might have an ultrasound to confirm viability of the pregnancy. We do extended prenatal care for anyone that has Medi-Cal. So we have a really, really amazing prenatal care program called Centering Pregnancy. It's an evidence-based group prenatal care model. So you are paired in a group with people that are due around the same time as you. It is unbelievable. It's probably my favorite program. It's run by midwives, nurse midwives. And what I love about it is it's not just your medical care, but you get community, you get therapy, you get 10 weeks of childbirth classes and nutrition and breastfeeding and all the things that you need with peers. So that program we offer. And then sexual health related, we do STD testing and treatment, so women and men. And we do like contraception education and provide birth control. And then on the other side, the non-medical, we do have therapists. So we work with marriage and family therapy interns and associates. We have a supervisor that runs, an MFT supervisor that runs that whole program. And we can see, it doesn't have to be pregnancy related issues. On the prevention side as well, we have a sexual health education program that goes into local schools and organizations, and it's called Reality Check. So we do that on the preventative side. And then, you know, we're there for people as they make these decisions. So I think one of the narratives that people hear is, well, if you're in pregnancy or sexual health, you must either be, you're either pro-life or pro-choice, or you have to be one or the other, right? Like you have to have some stance and some bias.
Some agenda too. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's where the polarization comes in. And it's very difficult to just be like, actually, no, you can just love people through these situations. Now, we don't provide abortions at Claris. We're very upfront about that. That's not like one of our services that we provide. However, many people who come to us do still choose that, and they know that we're there for them afterwards. So it's not like they come to us and they're told not to do that. You know, that is an option. In LA, there's so many places that specialize in that. It's not something we specialize in. And the benefit to that is it really does allow us to be very neutral. So we also don't facilitate adoption. So if somebody chooses adoption, we're not brokering. I don't have a list of families that I'm like matching with mm-hmm. these birth moms, right? We're saying, if you're interested in adoption, there's a lot of organizations that can help you with that. We will just be there for you through the process. Mm-hmm. And those who choose abortion, we're there for them. So sometimes somebody might have an abortion and call us the next week and want to talk about it. Sometimes we don't hear from people for 10 years. And then they call and they're like, hey, I really want to talk this through. Or same with adoption. I mean, adoption, I think, is another sort of narrative in the world that you hear from one side or the other. Either adoption is terrible or adoption is so wonderful, but it's usually only looking at one side of adoption. But the reality is adoption is complicated. It's mm-hmm. very nuanced. My youngest daughter was adopted. We have a very open adoption with her birth mom. It's beautiful and so hard, you know, but
what do you mean by open? What does a very open adoption mean?
Yeah, great question. So we see her birth mom frequently. She used to live pretty close to us. So we had, you know, she was almost like a little sister to me and has a relationship with our daughter. I mean, I really do see it as it's not, you know, she's her birth mother. Mm-hmm. And so navigating that relationship and in a way that also honors my daughter so that she doesn't feel like, you know, caught in between. So we've done like a really great job at that. She lives on the East Coast now, but we still talk frequently and I have so much love for her. And it's, you know, if she had changed her mind, like this is one of the right, so many people that choose adoption, they're so afraid that the birth parents will change their mind. And, you know, I walked into this going, I got to be her doula for the birth and I was there. But if she had changed her mind 2 weeks later, sure, it would have been sad, but I would have wanted her to have all the resources right, to parent that.
If you love your daughter, then yes. It's not a possessive.
It's not a possessive.
I love them as long as they get to be mine. And
yes.
I do want to touch on reunification in a sec, because I think that's a narrative that never gets talked about. But keep going.
Yeah, so that's the open aspect. And her birth father, too. And I think honoring them as a part of her life and birth story. I mean, we talk about adoption all the time in my house. I have another daughter that's biological, so that just, you know, having the two, so it comes up all the time. And I think it's been sweet for other people, because I get questions like, weren't you afraid that she was going to take her back? Or weren't you afraid that she's going to like her? Like, is she going to like her more than you? I mean, that's, you know, a common question.
And what were your answers to those questions?
What
are the common questions and what are the answers to them?
She might like her more than me. Actually, she probably will, because I have to do the hard things. You know, she's 11. She's tough. So sure, you know, I think her birth mom's name is Becky. I love Becky. And when Becky comes, she gets to bring presents and they get to do fun things. And I'm the one that has to discipline her. But we joke about stuff like that. And it's like, look, I want her to have that relationship. And I guess, I mean, if she likes her more than me, in my mind, it's if I love her well, she will always know that. And she'll be secure in that. So if she wants to, you know, spend more time with her, or she goes through a hard time in life and she's able to help her more than I am, it's letting go, you know, sort of letting that sit. With my bio daughter, I'm like, I have to let her go too. She's 16, so I'm really letting her go, you know, a lot now. And so it's just tough, like navigating those things and really saying, okay, let's think through this. We've had tough conversations when, you know, when she was five, she would say things like, well, I don't belong here anyway. And, you know, and, oh, I could have taken that. So, and then I realized, like, she's just trying to feel out, like, what is she allowed to say without me getting mad at her? You know, so processing those emotions, talking about that with her, like, why would you say that? We really love you. We have kind of a joke in our house. I don't know. This I might be severely judged for this one, but we always say, you know, for a while when she would be like, I didn't grow in your belly. And I'm like, yeah, but I paid a lot of money for you. So now my girls will be like, you got to grow in her belly, but she likes me more because she paid for me, you know? So that's kind of the joke. So sometimes humor, like turning these like big, heavy conversations into something that's kind of funny. So now my 11-year-old has a really funny sense of humor when it comes to adoption.
Okay, I know nothing about adoption. So just two or three questions on that topic, just for my to satisfy my own curiosity. What is the response to the 5-year-old that says, I don't belong here anyway? That's processing, such a heavy thing to process that. And one level of the narrative in their head could be, I was given away and not wanted. And another level, I was severely wanted, but caught between both of those narratives. What is an appropriate answer to a daughter saying that out loud and processing it?
Yeah, I think part of it was trying to figure out what is she really saying with this. And I realized it was very confusing for her, because her birth mom at the time, she drove a nicer car than I did. She had a really nice, she lived. So the narrative that a lot of people say was like, oh, they couldn't parent you, so they chose this. But in her mind, she's like, she looks like she has more money than you do. Why? So that narrative wouldn't work with her, right? So I just rehearsed a story. We got really great advice when I was going through the adoption process, where somebody said, tell the birth story to your older daughter, because then she'll always communicate it in a way that a child can understand. So that was really helpful. But we would say things like, you know, I know it's really hard for you to understand this, but here's the reality of what was going on in the situation at that time. You know, it was really important to her that she not raise you alone. She wanted you to have a family that was very different than the family that she could give you at that time. Doesn't mean that she didn't love you. And then language is so key. So with adoption, anytime a lot of people will say, they gave up their baby. So we have very specific language. No one gives up a baby, right? They make an adoption. So they make an adoption plan, or they placed a child for adoption. These are not foster. Foster situations are very different, right? When a child is removed from the home. So I'm in a world where this was all planned. This was a choice that she made. Then there are a lot of people who this was a choice they didn't make. And so communicating that to a child in a way is even tougher. Or maybe it makes more sense than in my situation, where my daughter's like, she didn't have to choose this. So she willingly chose this. So just trying to give language to them. And I would always say to her when she was really little, I would say, you know, yes, you know, Riley grew in my belly, because that's what they think at the time. But you grew in my heart. Like, I really did love you before I knew you. I did think of you before I prepared and planned for you. You were always wanted. Like you were never unwanted. And so I think that's really kind of the message of, do I belong? Like, I think that's really what she was asking. And then by letting her have those moments and I would just retell the story every time. Like, this was a choice. It was made out of love. I know it's really hard to understand. Maybe one day it'll make sense to you. And then she stopped. I mean, I think this went on for 3 months and then she never said it again. So
was there ever a dialogue in her head of like, or within your head of what if the birth mother wants to come back into the picture, like, and readopt your daughter?
So legally there's a lot of once they're in an adoption, there's always like they terminate parental rights at some point. Mm. So in our situation, she had 30 days to change her mind. But after that 30 days, and then the adoption was finalized when my daughter was about 11 months old, she couldn't do that again. But there were 30 days where she could have changed her mind. And she asked to see us on day, I think it was 14. And I remember that day being like, this could be the day that she changed. She was well within the time to change. And she told me later that it was almost a bit of a test for her that day, because, you know, we really did communicate this message of we love you, not for your baby. Hmm. You know, it was, I really do care about you. And I think she felt or was worried that once we had the baby, I wouldn't care about her anymore. And so being willing to meet her and the birth father 2 weeks later, when nothing was finalized, as she said, spoke this loud message to her that, no, you really do care about me as me, mm-hmm. not just because I'm, you know, placing this baby in your home. So
sounds like it really accelerates that discipline of letting go. If it's, you know, for many people, it might be a teenage years. Yeah. But that sounds like you really had to be okay with, however, and still to this day, even at 11, okay with emotionally. I mean, maybe physically, geographically in one home, but if they're emotionally,
yeah,
swaying between different parental figures.
Yeah.
That's an extra dynamic that most parents aren't thinking about. What is it like now at 11 and 16? Is there, and feel free to you know, not answer if it's too personal for your children. You're such an open person. I think you'd answer, but if it's too personal for them, feel free to not answer. But is there still a lingering feeling at 11, or the dynamics 11, 16 of, okay, one's like, both feet in firmly placed within the family, and one, the 11-year-old might still feel one foot in, one foot out.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's interesting. So my older daughter is very much, she has some of my good and bad traits. And so I feel like it's almost harder. Sometimes we butt heads more. So I think if you looked in, I almost relate more to my, or have a lot more empathy, or it's easier to parent the little one because I'm like, I don't really understand you. Like, you were so foreign to me because you were so different to me. And so I think if you ask, I think my older one would probably say, oh, she likes her more. But also it's just because she's 11. 11-year-olds are easier to love than 16-year-olds who, you know, fight with you and take a car and just leave, you know. So right. It's very different. Like, there's this letting go at an older age. But I mean, I love both my kids so much, and I hope and pray that they're, you know, that they look back, because they've had a hard, we've had a hard, they've had some hard things in their life that they've had to navigate. And I think as a parent, I mean, to go back to Clarice, one of the things that I love about just the concept of motherhood or fatherhood is it is so unifying, because we all have those same questions. Like, I was gonna say
the group aspect of the prenatal or the therapy after birth has to be way more powerful than one-on-one with a therapist, because
Yes.
It is just like, oh, these people are just like me. They're asking the questions I didn't even think to ask, but yes. I need the answer for.
And at our core, we all want to know, are we doing this right? Are our kids going to turn out okay? Are they going to love us? Are they, you know, and letting go of like our identity isn't in how well our kids turn out. Like that's a really hard thing as a parent to, you know, let go. And I think sometimes, especially if they're biological children, you feel this, well, however they turn out is a reflection on me. And so like letting go of that and just being like, no, they're unique individual beings. But no, I don't think she feels that way at all. I really don't. But if she grows up and has questions, I mean, I think this is where I'm a huge proponent of therapy. I love talking about these things mm-hmm. and making sure. I mean, I've tried to get both my kids in therapy over some of the things. And, you know, I think sometimes they're more open than not. But I think opening that door for kids to allow them to process and. Yeah. And I realized we didn't answer all the rest of Clarissa's services.
Yes, please. Which yeah.
are so on the after side. So, you know, being there for people. So if they choose adoption, you know, we have a birth mom support group that we help with as well and therapy for that. Post-abortion, same thing, pregnancy loss. And then parenting. So, you know, once somebody makes that choice, there's, you know, connecting them with a doula so they don't go through birth alone, providing some of those prenatal services and then therapy and then parenting classes. So we're there for the first 5 years. Oh, so wow. Not just classes and therapy, but any needs that they have. So we have baby stores that are all donated items. We partner with like Baby to Baby and some other organizations. Parents will say, hey, we have all these extra diapers, or people do diaper drives for us in the city, wipes. But then there's special needs that come up, like a crib or a bed, or somebody once needed, I think, an air conditioner, you know, and we can help solve some of those things. So the material assistance. So it's really just sort of wrap around care, like you said, 360 care, to say, if it's not a service we provide, then we'll find it. And our, you know, patient advocates are almost more like caseworkers, where we know the resources in the city. So if you come to us, we don't house you, but we'll find housing. Mm. If you come to us and you are in a domestic violence situation, we have resources. But it's not, here's a paper with all these services. Right. It's, I'm going to make a call. We're going to help you navigate this. And then we're not going to let you go when you get there. We're still here.
Is that for 5 years of continual care, is that for each one of the services?
All services would. I mean, hopefully you're not in therapy for 5 years, but you know, those are more shorter term. The support groups that we run are usually 10 to 12 weeks. But parenting, you know, the child is, oh, and post-adoption, sometimes, yeah, you might be in, we're in relationship with people for a lot of years. Also, the first five, sometimes people get pregnant again and have another child. And so then, it ends up being 8 years or 10 years, you know, just depending on how long they need the services. But people do, when they come to us, they don't want to leave. And I think that does speak to the type of care that they get, that we started prenatal care because the infant maternal mortality rates in the city are horrendous, especially among African American moms. And that is a large population that we serve. And so this type of prenatal care is known to reduce some of the stressors that contribute to that. So that was one. But also, we did it because people would come to us, they'd find out they're pregnant, and they didn't want to leave. They were like, I want this type of care. I want to stay here. And so we started looking at how could we do this in a way that provides for people so they don't have to then go get all their other care elsewhere.
Does, there's each one has its own rabbit hole of questions around it. But so to round out our conversation, I do want to touch on reunification. That's a word I was not aware of, but that sounds, again, just this theme of like so obvious and yet such a gnarly dynamic to approach. And perhaps that's actually where I want to end, which is the courage that you have and your organization has to untie these dynamic knots and to figure out, okay, we're going to take a stand and this should exist, even if some people are going to judge it from a mile away. Some people are going to say you shouldn't get into that type of dynamic within a family. It's almost like you, from the outside, you can't win in some of these things, but from the inside, you can't not act.
Yeah.
So maybe walk me through reunification, and then maybe that's a decent segue powerful. To that.
Yeah, it's a powerful way to present it. I think reunification is something, maybe it's not talked about enough in our society, and that is that there are circumstances where there might be a break in the family, and it could be as simple as a domestic violence situation. There's a fight that happens in the home and the police are called, and depending on the situation or maybe where you live, those children might be removed. And then a process starts, and it's a process of a lot of court hearings, maybe representation, maybe you don't have the funds. So then, representation is assigned. But in that, it's probably, I can't imagine anything more stressful than not having my children with me. And I understand that just how complicated it is when suddenly a foreign entity like Child Protective Services or the Department of Child and Family Services enters your life and scrutinizes everything you do to the point where they'll walk in your home and say, I need to see your refrigerator. I need to see your kids' beds. And suddenly your ability to parent is in question. Maybe there are situations where it's rightfully so, and then other times that maybe it's not, but here you are in this situation. Either way, whether it's something you did or that was done to you, you deserve to have an advocate that walks through this with you, that still believes that you have the ability to turn this around. And if that doesn't happen, that's a worst case scenario, right? That we would all agree, like, gosh, that's so tragic when that doesn't happen. And so then the process, this reunification process, is where we enter is, and I use the example of a mom, but this is dads too. So we have a lot of dads in the program who are assigned, maybe there's a domestic violence situation and they can't have access to the children for a while, or they're still in the home, but they're required to do this. So the idea is, you do the classes, you satisfy the courts, whatever the requirements are, and then you're reunified. And hopefully it's a one-time horrible situation that never happens again, right? And you all can all look back on. But I think, navigating that alone is so hard. I can't imagine what that's like. And so I think navigating it within a team of people who say, look, we're here for you. We're in your court. We're fighting for you. We're showing up to your hearing. A lot of that program, we go to hearings. We write letters on behalf of individuals. And we work even with some... there's a place called Claire Matrix, which is a substance abuse, like a recovery program. There's inpatient and outpatient. I believe they still have inpatient. And we've worked with a lot of dads so they might be in the program because addiction is another reason.
And that's one of your programs, Claire Matrix?
Claire Matrix is a substance abuse recovery program. So they were two organizations that merged. But there are people who are either residents or in their outpatient program, a lot of parents. And addiction is one way that causes a huge breach in a family. And so the classes are often assigned to people. So we teach those at some of these groups. And it's been so incredible to see these dads who love their kids, but they struggle with addiction, which you can love your kids and struggle with it. It does not mean you're a bad parent, right? Mm-hmm. You have an addiction that you are working on and hopefully in recovery for. And the decisions you've made during that addiction process can have devastating consequences on your kids and your family. So I think, but seeing the value in that. So, and then your last point to end on, I think I will say in 23 years of being here, never imagined I would do this. Did not choose to do this. But I'm so thankful that I did. And, I think part of it's just a personality thing where I'm a justice person. I believe in fighting for justice. And it's hard to be in a field where you are targeted because people want to label you. They want to shove us in a box. Two sides want to shove us in a box. And I could name names of groups who have forced us in this box and other groups who've tried to force us in that other box. And so I have to live in sort of this gray zone of like, no, it's not who we are. And like you said, that if you walk through the doors, and I've extended invitations to these extreme groups to say, why don't you come and take a tour, spend a day with us? And you can't believe what you believe if you actually sit in our lobby and talk to the people, because those who've been cared for, I mean, our five-star rating is like 99.something% of people give us five stars. Like, they love the care that they receive. And but it's these political groups and these people who are really extreme. And what I will end on, what I love is in a city like this where, I don't know, or at the dinner you came to, for example, 500 people, very different political views in that building, different faiths, different, but they all join together for this, in this one moment in time, they're all united to say, we want to care for women and children and families in the city and in this nation who are struggling. Let's link arms and do this. And I look at the tables and I sometimes am like, oh, you're sitting, you two would hate each other. I see your Facebook accounts, right? Mm-hmm. All the stuff that people are screaming. But here they are at a dinner because they don't know that. Because for today, they're joined for this one reason. And I think that that is probably the sweetest part of my job. And building content around that, like messaging.
The stories are so, so powerful. It's, and it, it really is. It takes it from, I mean, even just being a nonprofit, there is this pre-programming of like, okay, is that going to be very relevant? Where is that going to be? Are they going to be basically like a carbon copy of the DMV of people just phoning it in and not really making an impact? And you all are the tip of the spear of nonprofits doing it so well that it's, I feel like you all need to write a book on what you all have nailed. And the nonprofits I've worked for, none of them have been as effective, efficient, well-run, well-run, but the initiative is in everybody's hearts there, it feels like, and not like an incentive of, if we do this, then we can get more donor money. Yeah. But it's the initiative, and maybe it's because so many of the people that work there have been impacted by the work themselves, like you and your story. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and that dinner, or anyone that's interested, we're going to put all of the links in the show notes for you to see the stories. It's like I said, it you can't not act. After getting to know you all earlier this month, we were able to give you all the lion's share of that donation from that we make each year, 5 cents per bottle. Yeah. And we couldn't believe, felt so beside ourselves with the good fortune of being able to give that type of check to an organization. But it really was more like, once we knew what y'all did and how many people, like Alencia and her story, and seeing the video of three children that are going to have their own impacts with their families in 20 something years.
Yeah.
And their families, the joy of a world that she probably thought was never possible, was not for her when she first met you all. That is her reality each day. I'm sure it's quite hard. As a parent of three, I'm sure it's quite hard at times as well. Yeah. But also that joy was, you know, unmistakable on her, mm-hmm. on her face when she reflected on the life that she had with y'all's help. We could not act, and it's for anyone interested, it's really, it's worth a few clicks for you to see what I mean. Okay. Because hearing me is kind of nothing compared to seeing those stories.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I mean, we're still just blown away by the partnership and not knowing the research you were doing behind the scenes was, it was so sweet. It's so sweet for me to hear, because sometimes, you know, in the day to day, it is tough. You do feel sometimes caught in the storm of, oh my gosh, we're just trying to help people and create legacies, you know, brighter futures, right? But you know, you're caught in this like crazy storm of people trying to pull you. And so to see like, here's two guys who did all this research on us and came away with this understanding that we're doing really good work and we're doing it in a really good way. And transparency and integrity is one of our core values.
Well, online, and you can see so many reviews. You can see so many different outside reviews, Charity Navigator, things like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you maybe one day a month, just choose a random nonprofit and do the research on it. You'll feel much better about Claris and your work. You're like, oh, wow. Okay. So that's another organization aiming to make an impact. Because I know what it's like to be mired in the details and feeling like, oh my goodness, this Everest just keeps getting bigger. But then you look around and you say, actually, you know what? We're making some incredible progress compared to peers. Comparison is not always the best medicine, but but for you all, when you all are crushing it so, when you're doing so well in what you're doing, and it's so obvious with a few different searches that it is, in that perspective of just, I think that 360 degrees really nails it for me, of just where people can come in from any angle and then they have this cascade of different services.
Yeah.
It's remarkable versus one that's quite contained of, I've spent countless hours in different homeless shelters over the years, and that was always the go-to volunteer opportunity I would take in my life, and it was really hard to see that when someone's in the desert, to just give them one thimble's worth of water and then say keep moving, it's very difficult in comparison to what you all do, where it's like, oh my goodness, here's. And I have no agenda in saying this. I got no benefit in saying this about you all. We've already given you the check. So, but to where it's like, here is a glass of water, and let's get you out of the desert, and in some good shelter with a running faucet.
Yeah. No, that's powerful. I can end on. I'll tell you exciting. Speaking of legacy, you can decide if you want to leave this or not. We are so passionate about this 360 care and trying to eliminate more and more barriers, especially in a city like Los Angeles. So we are actually building a campus in South LA where we're going to bring these resources under one roof, so that Claris doesn't do it all. But some of those partnerships that are warm handoffs, we want to bring them under one roof, but do it in a very Claris way, which is, we want drop-in childcare, so you can come access, you know, so hopefully in there will be, you know, organizations that help with job placement, and we have some high-risk medical providers that want to join an organization that works within the rehabilitation of former victims of human trafficking and domestic violence, and just bringing them all under this one roof in a community center feel. So not only drop-in childcare, but we'll have a safe playground, coffee shop where you can get free Magic Mind and coffee, and building that community in a community that has been so desolate and so forgotten. Like the playgrounds, there's very few safe playgrounds in South Los Angeles now. There's very few places to gather. And so to build something that looks so beautiful, one of my visions is, I went to Google yesterday to their headquarters, and I walked in and I was like, I want, like, this is what I'm dreaming. It's so beautiful. And there's all this greenery. And like, I want people to walk in and feel like you can take a deep breath, just sit for a while, and we'll help you navigate this crazy city in under just one roof. Just come here, and then we'll have care coordinators. So anyhow, that's just a little exciting sort of vision for the future that we're actively working on, and we've raised some decent seed money to try to make this happen. So stay tuned.
That is beautiful. Yes. And the mental health services that you all provide, I think that that set and setting is so critical for people to want to go back. Yes. And, you know, they might be going for the free coffee, but then find themselves relishing in the ongoing mental therapy that that ends up unlocking a new life that they never thought was possible. Yes. So,
yes.
Talitha, thank you so much for being a lighthouse in our city for these problems that I just would never come across. So many of us would never come across. And not just being a lighthouse for the problems, also being a lighthouse for the people that have these problems to be able to come in and find solutions, care, and caring individuals to help them walk through. Like I said, I mean, it's just like you could combine three different extremely chaotic, dramatic, dynamic things in one's life all in to that person's Tuesday that they're coming into, probably thinking it's a Hail Mary that an organization, anyone can help me, much less help me with all of these areas. And you all do it with such effectiveness and grace. It is, it's a lighthouse for, I think, every organization that aims to do good in the world. So thank you for being that example.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and all the support. We're so blessed, so excited. Thank you.
Well, we look forward to being a part, a small part of what you all are building for a long time. Yeah. So thanks again.
Thank you.